Mr. Whitaker, Reel 29. You were talking about how you came to leave Pegau camp, the SS-run camp. How did that come about?
The corporal who'd taken us down from... fetched us from Ebelbart, came along and told us we were off the next day. And the next day off was set with our gang. As I said, about a dozen Englishmen. Quite a bunch, maybe 50 or so Russians, and a party of Frenchmen, these French who'd been kept separate from us. And they had a trolley loaded with British Red Cross parcels. And we didn't like them. To put it mildly, we hated the sight of the rotten devils, because the first thing they, when we lined up to march off, they insisted that if the British were at the head of the column, they were at the back with the Russians in between. Or they were going to the head of the column with the Russians and the British at the back. But whatever, they weren't going to march near the British. And we knew we'd got this, a little, you know, two-wheeled market trolley, flat trolley, loaded. We knew damn well we'd see it with Red Cross parcels. And these were not prisoners of war. These were voluntary workers in anybody's language. Anyway, off we set. We were on the road a few days, two or three days, I think, this time, stopping in barns. We got a soup and a bit of bread. We still got a bit of Red Cross stuff, so we were able to mash tea.
And where were you going to? Or did you know?
We didn't know, but he said we were going to where the others, we were going to meet the rest of the party. He said, before you... He said, the whole stalag moved in. And I couldn't be certain, but I think we finished up after a few days at a place called Zeltvade. We'd had one or two farms.
Zelt what?
Zeltvade. It was Zeltweg. And I'm not certain about it, something like that. We had a few barns on the way. For instance, the French at one place were in little rooms, a place with a big, like a schoolroom place. And the French insisted that the guard lock them up so the British couldn't get at them. And they said, and they unloaded these Red Cross parcels and took them into this room. Their corporal got one or two people helping him, of course, and he said to us, he said, you wouldn't steal those parcels, would you? They said, well, bloody hell we wouldn't. They said, why don't you unlock the door and let's get at them? He sympathised with us, but as he said, it was as much as his life was worth. We'd have had him. The Russians, I walked a long way with a corporal was the highest ranking. Very interesting. He asked me what was going to happen to us after the war, and I said, oh, should get me paid and go spend it on beer and, you know, wine, women and salt. He said, what about you? Oh, he said, we should go to a labour camp. He said, we've been told. He said, when I got caught, he said, I was in charge of a machine gun. He said, and the officer told me, they said, if you stay there, the Germans will kill you. They said, and if you come back, I shall. And they said they'd been told that if they were prisoners, they'd have several years in the labour camps as a punishment. One day, we arrived at this place where I said earlier, it had been bombed heavily. And that was the one the people were, to say the least, hostile. Who were they? We passed the place where they'd been bombed, and there was simply a big black, as big as a football pitch, and it was black with a few bits of iron, and that had been a factory. There were tiles off, not a lot of damage to the houses, but tiles and odd bricks and windows boarded up. There was an unfortunate thing when the feathers, and this was one of the, they'd bought a load of potatoes. And I must say, I ate so many potatoes, we've not had a real hot meal for a day or two. I stuffed myself, I suffered in the night, I was sick as a dog, just for eating potatoes. But before we left the next one, there was hell to pay, because some woman who'd been, she'd been spitting at us and calling us American dogs. they're gangsters, the usual thing. And she declared that something had been stolen. I've forgotten what. And she said the English must have stolen it, you know, if they're all gangsters. Turned out, unfortunately, one of these Russians had actually, I don't know how they found it, and they took summary justice on him. They beat him to a fashion and said to the Duke, you know, and said, well, that's satisfying. And this woman said, you ought to hang him. Anyway. When we walked the other side of this village or little town, I must admit it did make me feel rather sick. There was a cemetery and there were two huge, there must have been 100 yards long, obviously graves covered in flowers. And that, of course, was why the people didn't like us. As I say, I really couldn't, I must admit I couldn't blame them. Anyway, we arrived at this camp and met up with quite a lot of our friends.
What was this camp called?
I haven't a clue. It was only wasn't a real camp. It was, they'd put some barbed wire up and they'd collected us. They issued us with, they formed us into groups, I forget how many, 50. Jack and I managed to get, we volunteered. As I say, we'd become quite good at this survival business. So we volunteered to take charge of a group and collected 50 people. And they issued so many Red Cross parcels between us and told us that would be our main source of food. And they told us we were going to march to a place where we should remain until the war was over. We were there a day or two and off we set, part of the 50. And this was the most, this was quite unbelievable, this march. When, after the first day or two, we settled into a routine. We were lucky, most of the groups but then had acquired these hand carts where they'd loaded everybody's kit on, got ropes, and some people pulled and some pushed. But by the time you'd done a mile or two, or probably should say kilometres, this was Austria, out of your 50, you'd find you'd got just the people pushing the cart, and the rest were scrounging, begging, borrowing, or stealing. They'd go miles up the hillsides, everywhere, and the guards made no attempt to stop them. You pulled all your resources, cigarettes, spare vests, pants, anything that might do for bartering, and your scroungers, your traders, would get out and try and find farms nobody else had been to, or anybody willing to barter for potatoes, or if possible, bread. Bread was always the thing.
Did you ever do the scrounging part?
I never did that. I was never...
So how many men would there be? You were in parties of 50.
Yes.
How many guards would a group...
There was one to each 50.
So you could have just gone into the woods.
You could have gone. But we were going, hadn't we? We were marching, we were marching west. And we decided that, you know, we were going home, whatever they said. We did learn at one time, I've forgotten when that was in camp or on the march, but one guard did say to us casually, of course Hitler's ordered all the prisoners to be shot, but we shan't do it. He says, because I forget what they called the Allies, he said, they've got too many Germans and we'll shoot them. But this, I can assure you that out of your 50, you'd probably find 20 of you on the actually marching. It took us a few days to get a handcart, but I shouldn't be ashamed to say it. We got ours on a Sunday morning. We marched to this village. We stopped at the village every most nights. They've got this fairly well arranged, where they had facilities to brew up. And as I say, they didn't supply. I can't remember. I think they supplied a few potatoes or hot water or something. But we marched to this village on a Sunday morning. And everybody was at church, so when we passed this farm, there was this handcart sitting outside the farm. So that was how we got our handcart. I hope we put up. I bet they said a prayer for us when we got back. So we loaded all the kit on this, and our God loaded his on, and he never said a word to us. It was much easier for him to buy. His rifle as well, by the way. He occasionally get us, I think the leader, well, there wasn't an officer at all. The leader was only something like an equivalent of a warrant officer. And the sergeant rode up and down as his bike now began to see that everything was all right.
That's of the whole lot.
The whole column.
Not just the 50 groups.
Not just the 50, right up and down. The same, you'd have one man. So you'd have a German guard, you see, between each 50. I'm sure it was. This went on, I think, about, I forget, a week or so. We passed through one village, and in the middle of the village street, you've got white stones. And in the middle of the white stones was a German soldier, very dead and bloated, and a big sign, proper printed wooden sign, which said roughly, this is what happens to people who desert the Third Reich. Be warned. Achtung. The place, we finished up at, I say finished, the day before we finished, we came to this little village at the foot, where we were then becoming. Where the country was very hilly. We passed through some lovely country. April, fine days. It was, and we were walking home. It was really very pleasant. After the feet got a bit sore, we got to this place, and they told us the next day, they said, leave all your carts, your trolleys, you'll never get there. So we're going over a mountain pass, and you'll never get them up there. They said, you're going half a mile up the road, and then it's. And this other side, I was going to think, this again, like high tour, bam, straight up. We went down the village, but then there was one of the little mortar places at the back of the church, with a big window, and propped up in the middle was another German with the same sign. Actually, this is what happened. But that's what they did, they left them there as a burden. So, the next morning, we set off on this, what was told the final day of the march. We marched along, went round this corner, and it was there was a T junction where our sign said something or other. The road went. It was a door. It was like one of the Derbyshire hills, you know. I'm proud to say we got up. As we got up, we gradually got into the snow line, and before long. Snow was 2-3 feet deep, and before long it was up to your shoulders, and it had been cut out. And we didn't lose it was like the war. We didn't lose a single trolley. It did have to take some pulling. When we got to the top and stopped and rested, there was a few people skiing, and the guards said, "Be a bit careful." They said it's an SS recuperation place where wounded SS come for the. There were all these people skiing, and one or two of them did whip past us, and they had got the, you know, but it was quite a beautiful scene, as I say, snow in this hotel. The rest of them down the other side, within a very short time, out of the snow, and there was bottom on the trees. And we're finished up at this place, it was called the Markt Pongau, MARKTPONGAU, which I've since learned that Hitler named it this. He had his name was St. Joseph or something, which I don't really know, but I did understand that Hitler didn't like the name. Bürster's Garden was just over the mountain range. This was a fairly big village. There was a huge camp situated between a railway line and the river. About a short distance down from us, the mountains. On the other side of the railway track, mountains. You know, none of you, fir trees, then rock. And, there, met my old friend Topper Brown. There were Mongolians, Americans, you name it, they were there.
In this huge camp?
In this huge camp. We were in tents. Met up with Harry and Ben Rose, who'd been, you know, from the other camp. Met lots of people who would know them from Italy, but didn't meet any more. Oh, we met John Walker. Yes, of course we did. We met John to our great delight. He told us about his experience as a POW playing chess with a U-boat captain from the First World War. We exchanged reminiscences. It was really nice to see. We were there a few days. Things then rapidly began to get, I'm going to say out of hand, that's not quite it, but the Germans rapidly were losing interest. There was no British officers. Well, there was one, a parachute major who was on crutches, got both legs broken, and he hobbled about and tried. There was a warrant officer class one from some service we didn't recognise, you know, like the Royal Army Service Corps or somebody that, you know, he tried to instill discipline into the camp as the Germans began to let it go, had men with armband with regular RP, which it had made. So we told them what to do. I went and found myself a job for the day, so I went into the library, and somebody said, well, if I'd had any sense, I should have sorted through the books and taken the good ones, but I didn't, I sat and read. Then we cut holes in the wire. The Germans didn't object. One day we did see a huge car leave the camp with flags flying. And on inquiry, somebody told me, they said, oh, they said, do you know that? I said, no. He said, oh, he said, that's the Queen's cousin. He said, that's Lord Harewood. He said, they brought him from a camp in. So they brought him from a camp in Germany and they're going to hand him over in Innsbruck. We'd heard then that Innsbruck was in the hands of the Americans. True or false, we didn't know. So, a few days, we got wireless sets began to appear around the camp. Somebody had crossed the river and they found a store full of German army wireless sets. Jack went and got a most magnificent radio, all beautiful wireless set, dials and things, only one to it didn't work. But there were plenty of others to listen to. And came the day when we heard the end of the war. We heard the broadcast, and at night listened to the celebrations in London, Alaska, and with no sign or thing of anybody coming to relieve us. But anyway, we listened to this. And,
were you able to celebrate at all?
No, except, you know, saying to ourselves we've made it, that we did it for a war. We went and moved, we also found a store near a railway station. With our bags of flour. We picked our bag up. Guess what? We got bran. So we made porridge out of it. I tell you, we'd not really learned a great deal. We didn't know what effect bran had on you, but we soon found out. Hilarious. But we did trade people made flapjacks, you see, if you got flour and a bit of water. Because it wasn't only then, the Red Cross parcels had begun to run out. One or two, the Mongolians got fighting, they found a railway freight car with flour or beans or something in it, and one of the Mongolians stabbed the other. I always thought Mongolians were little chaps. These stood about 7'5", shoulders about 2 yards wide, and slit off. They all had big quilted coats on which made them look like bears. I wouldn't have gone near them with a barge pole. I was asked one day when I was in the library, somebody said, how about going out to some Americans in the camp? I said, how about going to have a word with them and cheer them up? I said, some of them a bit despondent. So I went along, and there weren't many of them. Got talking to one young man who sat there, head in his hands. And then one or two of us went on, and we tried to cheer him up, you know, it won't be long now. And this was just before we'd heard about the E-Day. And this, after our cheering up efforts, this clown said, ah, well, it's all right for you guys, but I've been here since October. That was October 44. We've got people with us who've been caught in Greece in 1940. So that was the end of our fraternising lot, wasn't it? They were, I don't think they were suited to the captivity. Other amusing thing, prisoners began to leave. There were always these wild yarns went about prison camps about what they called the bower boys. Farm. The bower's a farmer. These prisoners lived on farms and looked after the wives and daughters while the old man was fighting. And it became a personal thing to keep the farm going. And now a whole group of people actually left the camp and said, oh, you spent what? Well, I've got to go. We've got the, you know, I've got the wheat to sell. They did, they went back. One thing I didn't mention while we were in camp, we did get a new paper round inviting us to join the Free British, which you've probably heard.
When did you get that?
That was whilst we were in the London camp.
How did people react to that?
With great disgust. We did hear, through our grapevine, that one of the had appeared and tried to recruit people in the main stowage. But the nearest result was this paper inviting you to join. You'd only have to fight Russians. And a picture of a man in uniform, the great German with the Union Jack on his shoulder. But anyway, this was a different story. These lads from the farms were off back to look after us. It's ridiculous, isn't it?
So how did the camp come to an end? I mean, when did they...
It just petered out. And of course, the great event after VE Day was getting liberated. And that, was a normal sort of day, a bit of scrounging, listening to the radio, where the hell are they? Telling these people with the white vans on the things to F off. And, you know, they were trying to get you to do all sorts of things. I've got fed up with the library because just after VE Day, there was a very well-known Roman Catholic priest. Everybody had heard about him in our working camp. Got a terrific name amongst prisoners, and he was there. I forgot his name, Father somebody or other. But he and one of the warrant officers were discussing having a service to celebrate the end of the war. So they had this chat, and I was sitting there doing reading or doing, you know, logging books. And to my disgust, this warrant officer said to this padre, what about the Protestants? And this fellow replied, oh, what's it got to do with them? So that was the end of Father somebody's reputation, I was concerned. Anyway, going back to Liberation Day, we had the usual sort of day. And in the evening, near our tent, we've got this big hole of the wire, and Ben Rose and myself decided to take a stroll. And somebody said to us, are you going up the village? So we might. And he said, well, watch it, there's an SS division in the village. So we said, all right. So we said, okay, we'll watch it. We walked up the village. There was a guest house in the middle of the village. As we got there, this big staff car drew up, and out came this black, uniform, skull and crossbones, the lot. He looked at us rather curiously, so we saluted him. And he passed into the guest house. And we walked a bit further up the hill, and then the road swung left, so he was quite high up, and across the camp was low down in the bottom of the valley. We stood looking at this camp down in the valley, chatting. Big row of white vehicles with big red crosses drove along the road at the bottom. We couldn't get down the hill fast enough. And these were, there were vehicles, there were Red Cross vehicles, but the main thing, there was quite a big contingent of Americans with them. And that was it. We were relieved. They'd brought tons of what they called, compote rations, which they chucked out willy-nilly. Anybody want a pack of cigarettes? We found a pack of cigarettes, not a carton, about 200, you know. I say we had a, and then we did celebrate lots of food. The Americans, they said, they were telling us these Russians were lousy. To us, they were absolutely paradise. We dropped, I say we, between us, we managed to drop some enormous clangers, because I think we stayed up most of the night. The first one of our chaps, an American soldier, we didn't know they were called GIs then, sat chatting to us. One of our friends said, "How did you get along with the waltz?" And he looked down his nose and said, "I got on just fine. My name was Agnelli or something." And at night, later on in the night, they put some guards around the camp just in case, because they didn't. They were told about these SS people, and they were there. We were chatting, and we were sitting around the fire talking to this fella, and one of our pods said, "Of course," he said, "it's first real American I've ever seen." He said, "Of course, the only Americans we've ever seen are cowboys and Indians." And this rather dark featured young man turned and looked at us. He says, "Wow," he said, "I guess you've seen me then." He says, "'Cause I'm a Cherokee or something." I forgot. But apart from that, we got on famously with them.
Did you have to be careful about not eating too much? You'd not had that much food, and then.
Some of the lads had had. I can't remember being particularly upset. The brand had upset them more than the things. But it was lovely, great, at last.